So in India, and in the ancient India, so Nalanda happened to be the greatest, most famous university in which is responsible in upholding the Buddha Dharma in the completeness in terms of sutra and tantra both. So Nalanda happened to be the very center for intellectual learnings as well. So those great scholars like Nagarjuna and so forth, who wrote their composition in Sanskrit language, they happened to be from Nalanda University. And Vikramashila Monastery, come into existence after Nalanda University. So the kind of the tradition that is followed in Vikramashila Monastery, monastic university, happened to be following the same kind of lineage as that of the Nalanda University. And Atisha, Dibangara Atisha, so because in his later life, in his later part of life, he happened to be he was there in Vrigamalashila Monastery. So there, according to this tradition, so it says there is the tradition of when the teacher is giving discourses, there's a tradition of giving the discourse in these four different steps. First, explaining the greatness of the author for the sake of showing the authenticity of the teachings. Second, the greatness of the teachings for the sake of generating respect towards the instructions. And third, how the teachings characterized by these two greatnesses should be listened to and explained. And the last, the stages by which a disciple should be guided by means of the actual instructions. So, if somebody is really to compare the different teachers in terms of the intellectual learning or in terms of the experiences, so actually that has to be done by comparing the teachings that these great masters or that these great teachers they have given. So it is not just sufficient to praise the Buddha Shakyamuni by saying that, oh, he has a marvelous, elegant physical body, radiant body, and so forth. Because these qualities, they are commonly being shared by even the other teachers of the other traditions also. But rather, we have to really be able to admire, appreciate Buddha Shakyamuni by way of understanding his own teachings. Really try to see how he outstands in terms of his teachings. And then, when you really try to study his teaching, you have to see, you have to really come to appreciate him through realizing his teachings of selflessness or teachings of emptiness of the self. And then also appreciate him in terms of his uniqueness in terms of teaching the infinite amount of altruism, infinite amount of compassion, love, which pervades to all sentient beings, leaving no one aside. So, being able to appreciate Buddha Shakyamuni that way, then you will also appreciate Nagarjuna, Asanga, who are the genuine or the authentic followers of Buddha Shakyamuni. And then like from them again, you see their own followers. And then if you trace that way, we see that eventually in Tibet, there is the Shantarakshita, who first started flourishing Buddha Dharma there. So at that time, it has been almost like more than 300 or 400 years that the Buddhist teachings, Buddhism has already flourished in China. So back to our main point, Shantarakshita, he started establishing the monastic institutions and so forth, the Buddha Dharma in Tibet. So because of Chandrakshita, because he are facing so much of problems from the devils and the local spirits and so forth, from the spreading the Buddha Dharma, so then he instructed the king, Chisung Dezen of Tibet, to actually invite Guru Padmakara from India. And then there were other great scholars, and eventually there was Dipankara Atisha, who was invited to Tibet. So because that, the root of this teaching that Lama Tsongkhapa is going to compose, so that is actually the lamp to the path of enlightenment, which is composed by Dipankara Atisha. As such, it is going to explaining the greatness of the author for the sake of showing the authenticity of the teachings. So here, Lama Tsongkhapa is going to just tell a brief biography of Atisha, who composed the text, the lamp to the lamp to the path of enlightenment, which forms the very basis of the teaching that the middle version, Lamrim, composed by Lama Tsongkhapa. So let me read through these four different points again. So in Virgamala Shilam Monastic University, so the tradition is that whenever the teacher teaches something, the teacher does that, did that in four different ways. First, by explaining the greatness of the author of the text for the sake of showing the authenticity of the teachings. And second, the greatness explaining the greatness of the teachings for the sake of generating respect towards the instructions. And third, explaining how the teachings characterized by these two greatnesses should be listened to and explained. And fourth, explaining the stages by which a disciple should be guided by means of the actual instructions. So normally I've been saying this, so probably I want to say it again this time. So this concept of bodhicitta, the tremendous magnanimous altruism to achieve the desire to achieve enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings, this on the one hand, and the other one, that is the concept of selflessness or emptiness. So these two concepts, actually, we find that it is only in Buddhism that you find, and you find in no other tradition. So although there are countless numbers of various traditions in this world, and one thing that we have to keep in mind is that a proper teacher should be someone who can really understand the various dispositions, temperaments, and inclinations, and so forth, of the disciples. So it is because of this that there are times where Guru Shakyamuni remained himself away from teaching those subtle concepts of emptiness to some student, to some disciples. And it is because of this that at some point Buddha Shakyamuni taught as if that the self exists as independent, unitary, and eternal, because he kind of implied that the self is actually the carrier of all the pains, or the load. And these five aggregates, they are like the load. So this means as if like there is the load carrier, the self as the load carrier, something distinct or different from the aggregates as the loads. So there then he started teaching about, after that, then he starts teaching a little bit more subtler concept of emptiness, talking about how the self does not exist as autonomous substantial reality. So then when the disciple was able to promote himself in terms of the intellectual understanding, in terms of the wisdom aspect, so there then Buddha Shakyamuni started teaching the concept of the absence of externality. So again, when the student or the disciple is upgraded in terms of his in terms of his philosophical thinking. Then eventually Buddha Shakyamuni taught how everything lacks inherent mode of existence. So depending on the kind of the predispositions and the inclinations of the students, the Buddha taught different levels of selflessnesses. So when we take into consideration those traditions which teach about philosophy, which has some kind of element of philosophy in their teachings, so though all these different teachings, they differ in terms of philosophy, but in terms of the teachings as to how to be compassionate towards others, how to be kind towards others, and so forth, emphasizing the teachings of love, contentment, compassion, ethical discipline. So we see that they are very much commonly being taught by almost all these different traditions. So it is very clear that these teachings on the method aspect, like compassion and so forth, they are something commonly being taught by all the traditions. So first, offering tea. Do you see that in Chinese, the Tibetan stanza? So they speak about the biography of Adisha, the author of the Lamp of the Path to Enlightenment. So it basically comprises of the three points, headings: how Adisha took birth in an excellent family. So he actually took birth as a prince in one of the Indian empires. And second, how Adisha achieved his good qualities on that basis. So since that, for a particular individual, in order for him to achieve the different realizations, he has to first of all study study all these things that he has to realize. Similarly, Adisha actually followed this trend by first of all studying extensively in the Buddhist doctrines. Then through actually through integrating what he has studied extensively, so he achieved great amount of realizations and feats. So in terms of the realizations that Adisha has achieved, so that basically comprises of the three trainings: the ethical discipline, concentration, and wisdom. So with the ethical discipline, again, it is of three: the ethical discipline of the self, personal liberation, the ethical discipline of bodhisattvas, ethical discipline of tantra. So as said by Vasubandhu in his Abhidhamma Kosha, that the Buddha's teaching is basically comprised of two: the oral transmission aspect and the realization aspect. So how to uphold the Buddha Dharma of oral transmission? So that is primarily by way of actually teaching the authentic in an undistorted way. And whereas in terms of upholding the realization aspect of the Buddha Dharma, so that is by way of actually actualizing these teachings into your mind stream. So these are the only two ways by which to uphold the Buddha Dharma. So in the Chinese tradition, there are actually traditions. One tradition called the tradition following the Pure Land, and also another tradition called the tradition of concentration, emphasizing on single-pointed meditation and keeping kind of neutral with regard to extensive learnings. So even in Tibet, in some places, you find these traditions prevalent. and various it should be so helpful if one can really first of all emphasize on studying the Buddha Dharma extensively. Then after studying all these things at great length, then we can integrate that into your own practice. So if you do that, then that would be the proper way of upholding Buddha Dharma. So sometimes if you are not too cautious about the reality as to how to uphold the Buddha Dharma, then there are the tendencies in us to actually emphasize so much on constructing temples and so forth, and not actually so keen on studying the Buddha Dharma. So that, I think, is not the actual way of upholding the Buddha Dharma. So you should be very careful in actually understanding, be aware of the proper way of upholding the Buddha Dharma. Undertaking constructions of temples, stupas and so forth, they are good. It doesn't mean that they're bad. But if you are not keen on studying and these things and simply be emphatic on the construction of these things as if claiming yourself to upholding the Buddha Dharma, so that actually is not the actual way of upholding it. So this we should be really careful as to know exactly how to uphold the Buddha Dharma. Thank you.